You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Aaron, can we let this go a little bit here? All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here, brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. So that's some good break music there. I mean, you can't go wrong with Guns N' Roses. And I know some of you went to that show, that energy, a couple years back. Here's to hoping we get back to concerts in this next year. And in the stadiums to watch the Houston Dynamo and the Houston Dash. Big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, presenting sponsors of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. You get in a car accident, boat, motorcycle, you might drive an 18-wheeler, you might be in construction, well, you call the Daspit Law Firm, 713-322-HURT. John and his firm, they're going to bring you a personalized approach that'll work for you 24-7 nights and weekends. You'll get the representation you need with the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. By the way, bilingual at 713-322-HURT, presenting sponsors of Soccer Matters. And Hugh O'Connor, 7620, Katy Freeway, right near that big marquee entertainment center. They've been open. They've been putting on a lot of the Premier League games and soccer matches there. 18 TVs, big screens, the Houston Liverpool supporters group out there with our good friend Peter Kingston. And right now we are joined by Houston Dash head coach James Clarkson. James, I had to give you the big intro with Guns N' Roses.
Appreciate it, Glenn. How are you?
It took a lot of thought for me, but I wanted a big intro for you, so there you go. I'm doing great, and I hope you are as well, James.
Yeah, very good. Thanks.
Well, let's just kind of get into, like, right now, the things that are going on with you and your staff. I mean, obviously, you've got the two draft choices, Joel Anderson out of the beautiful Pepperdine University, Makame Gamara-Stevens from Washington State. Maybe just some thoughts on what you and the staff have been up to in this period, and then some thoughts on the two draft choices.
Yeah, it's we took a bit of time after the end of the season, you know, to recover mentally, physically. We all needed a little bit of time off, and we've been back in pretty much before Christmas, and then from the turn of the year. And there was a lot of work went into the draft, and I give a lot of credit to the staff because they really take ownership of the draft. They spend a lot of time studying players, talking to coaches, and getting a good feel. So I just write down who we're going to take. I trust them greatly, and you know they've done a great job this year and have managed to pick up two really good players. So. From that, you know, we've been working on, you know, how we improve on and off the field. We've been putting a lot of work in. The players come back in the next week or so. So we want to make sure that we're ready when the players come back in February 1st. So there's been a lot of work off, you know, away from the field in terms of just preparation. We've added new members of staff. And also, you know, we did a lot of work before the draft in some of the trades and a couple of signings that we made to really strengthen the team. So it's been a very busy offseason.
Very busy indeed. We're talking to James Clarkson, the head coach of the Houston Dash. Indication on when the NWSL is planning on starting and trying to get underway here under these very differing and challenging conditions?
So the first day the players need to be in market is February 1st. We've got a quite a large number that are already in market and they're training and working on their own in preparation for the pre-season. So they'll actually start on the field February 1st, and then those players that arrive February 1st, they'll have to go through the process, the quarantine and testing, and then we should be able to have the whole squad together by February 8th and start on the field with the whole squad February 8th. But as of February 8th, we'll have the three Canadians will be away with the national team. Hopefully, Christy, Jane will be away with the US team, and Rachel will still be with the England team. So Well, we have the vast majority. The international players will be away at the beginning of preseason.
You did sign Sophie Schmidt to a contract extension, and it just seemed like she really took off in the NWSL Challenge Cup in that tournament and was a real key piece of that incredible run that you guys made to winning that title.
Yes, she's a really important player for us. I thought she was good the first year, and you know, we looked at things, and you know, with the World Cup and everything, you know, last season it was just purely focused on us, and I thought she responded really well. We made adjustments to the way that we play in the formation. We adjusted her role's responsibility a little bit, and you know, she was magnificent, and you know, started scoring goals as well, and just all round performer. She was fantastic.
Talking about Sophie Schmidt of the Canadian national team, Houston Dash. We're talking with head coach James Clarkson, players reporting in February. All right, when putting this roster together, James, it's not easy work here because people forget there is a budget and you're trying to satisfy everybody. People want incremental raises when they do things well. You know, you're trying to give everybody a slice of the pie here. Talk about how difficult it is, you know, kind of working the budget out when you put a roster together that you want to really kind of play into the way you want to play the game in the NWSL with the Dash.
It is very challenging, and I'm sure you know everybody in the league will say the same thing, and so will everybody in the MLS. When there is a budget, it is difficult, and you've got to be creative. And like you said, when you have a bit of success, and certainly when players are coming to the end of their contracts and you're looking to renew them on the back end of some success, you know, market value goes up, and we know that. We think we've got some good assets that we've got to long-term deals that will be with the Dash for a long time. We think we've put together a good, solid roster, and I think one of the big steps that we've made is, you know, we've now got a clear style of play and how we want to play, and we know what the sort of profiles fit into that. So that kind of helps, and I think we've got a much more balanced roster. Whereas I think when I first took over, we had good players, but we had a lot of players playing the same positions, and so the balance of the whole squad was off. And now we've, over the last couple of years, we've made some adjustments, and I think we've got a much deeper roster and a much more balanced, where we've got competition in every position. And I think that will just help us continue to push forward and elevate to another level, because there's nothing like competition when you're fighting for your place.
Let's talk about Christy Mewis. We all love a great comeback story. We all like a great comeback story from a talented athlete that's had a very, very severe injury. She has come back in full bloom. Last year, fantastic for you. That was one of the big key pieces of also your rise, her health and her performance. And you saw her scoring a goal for the national team last night on national television. Just kind of your thoughts that went running through your mind when you saw a Houston Dash player on that stage scoring against Colombia.
I'm really, really proud and really happy for her. And it is reward for the work and the effort that she's put in. And you know, when I first started, she was injured, and she was just, you know, coming back from her ACL injury. And I spoke to Eddie Robinson, and Eddie told me that he felt if she hadn't have got injured that previous season, they'd have made the playoffs and had a good run at it. And it really took Christy that first year. You start to see it at the back end of that season. And then last year, you know, she took off, and I think she's got so much ability, and I still think we're really sort of scratching the surface. I think there's so much more room for growth with her, and she's got that mindset, and she wants to get better. She wants to get better every day, and it's great to see, and it should be an inspiration to everybody, you know, not just on the Dash, but within the league, that, you know, success doesn't happen in straight lines. There are setbacks, and this is where, you know, your character and who you are as a person and what your perseverance is, and the resilience that you have to want to fight back, and you can get back to the top, and it's exciting to see. And like I said, I think there's much more to come from Christy.
Well put, James. We're talking to James Clarkson, the head coach of the Houston Dynamo. Last night, Christy Mewis scoring. Her sister had a hat trick. Sam, four goals from the Mewises as the United States women's national team back in action beating Columbia 4-0. I really want to get into this with you, James. The Premier League's now investment in women's football in England and the investment that we see in Europe, quite frankly, in places like France and other places when it comes to the women's game. And we do see a lot of NWSL players making the move over there. How do you see that? Do you see that as competition? Do you see that as something that's going to raise the bar? And can there be some concerns that the NWSL, who loves to say it's the greatest league in the world, might be losing some of their top players?
Yeah, it's a daily discussion, and I do think it's good. I think it is raising the standard, it's raising the bar, and it's pushing everybody to get better. And I think you can see that the NWSL over the last 2 years, the progress that it's made has been incredible. And you see, you know, the expansion teams coming in, one this year, two next year, the league's growing, and it mirrors the MLS a lot in every team that's coming in raises that standard, whether that's facilities, infrastructure, staffing, all of it. And this, it's only healthy for the league, and it's healthy for us to push on. I still think it's the best league in the world, from top to bottom. I think every game is really competitive in the NWSL, and you look at all of the leagues in Europe, there's top two, three or four teams that the rest aren't particularly good. You see it every week, and even in England, teams getting beat 7-8-0. You don't get that in the NWSL. Every game is incredibly competitive, top to bottom. But I do think it's important that, you know, at some stage, you know, we're able to attract top players from around the world, and we want those top players. I also think, you know, that we've got to look at, it can't just be 24 league games. There's got to be cup competitions. There's got to be alternative play. There's got to be international play. All of these things go for a positive way to grow the women's game and really elevate the league within the U.S. and obviously globally.
James Clarkson joining us. James, listen, thank you very much for weighing in tonight here. We appreciate having you on the show, and good luck with getting things underway in February, and we'll look forward to your next visit here to keep us updated on the Houston Dash and everything Dash.
Okay, appreciate it. Thanks, sir.
All right, that's James Clarkson, head coach of the Houston Dash, turning things around. So, super to get some insight there on a number of things. And Abby Dalcomper was one of the players that ended up going over to England now. Rose Lavelle's over there. I think this is natural. I think it's not necessarily just the competition, but I think it's also going to a full-blown soccer culture. These are big brands in places like Manchester City and Manchester United. So I think some of this is natural. I think it's just a balance. And as James said there, the league wants to continue to attract big foreign stars as well. I only see the advent of the Premier League taking women's football serious as only a super positive for the NWSL, and you have to respond. And you have to remember that you're not the only game on the block, and that this can get you to self-examine what you're doing with your product, your teams, your investment, where the investment needs to go in order to maintain the status of the best league in the world. James made a great comment there about the competition top to bottom in the NWSL. Big day tonight, and Tom Ramos switching back to the Houston Dynamo. Fafa Pico, Joe Corona, Maxi Arruti, Tim Parker, all good stuff here. You remember last week he said on the show, you know, that, look, we're going to try to make some signings. There is a great possibility we're going to announce a center back that's going to address leadership and athleticism. That's exactly what happened. If you're a Dynamo fan here and you're talking about communication from a head coach to keep you engaged, to keep you talking about your team and to be able to debate what's going on. It's a good time right now because you got a head coach who is really very, very good at coming on and talking about players and kind of trying to take you behind the curtain a little bit about what he's trying to do with his team. And I think with these signings, you heard him very distinctively tonight, Tab Ramos, talking about the fact that he wants 100% character out of people that are going to fight every minute. And that's the type of players he's picking up here in Fafapico, Tyler Pascher, Joe Corona, Maxi Arruti, Tim Parker. Maxi Arruti's a pest. 54 MLS goals. I know some people are trying to compare him maybe to Mauro Minotas, who's still looking for his first goal for Tijuana. But I think you got to now begin to look at the sum of all parts. You know, what the front three will look like for the Houston Dynamo with Fafapico, with Maxi Arruti, with Ari Lassiter, with Mateo Bahamich coming from Instituto in Argentina. Maybe it's by a little bit more by committee. Christian Ramirez, who really is the most number nine out of all these players. He really is more of a number nine in a traditional sense than Maxi Arruti is. But they're all guys that are going to, when the ball's lost and turn over, they're immediately going to have to switch on and play the pressing game that the head coach wants. Now you've got a center back that's more athletic, can deal with things in open field, is going to push people around him to be better. You heard that from his college coach and Dave Major. So there's a lot of really interesting things going on here. All right, coming up in our next two segments, we're talking Barcelona, we're talking Real Madrid, we're talking Lionel Messi, first time being sent off ever in 754 games. The collapse at Barcelona and the struggles financially that are going on there. Jordi Sunyer, TV3 in Spain, you're going to love this. He talks Sergio Ramos and pay cut at Real Madrid and much, much more. He is coming up. It's all brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. You get in a car accident, boat, motorcycle. You might drive an 18-wheeler. John and his firm going to represent you. 713-322-HURT. Daspit Law Firm is going to bring you a personalized approach. They're going to work for you 24-7, nights and weekends. Get that representation you need with John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Let's take a break. Danish Inspirations Contemporary Furniture. Get over there, see Jan Christensen, and get that stressless lounge. Take a break. More to come. Soccer Matters. It's La Liga Talk next.
ESPN 97.5.
Hello, people. This is Alexi Lawless, and you are listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis on ESPN.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Again, brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. They are the presenting sponsor of Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5, and we thank them for that. 713-322-HURT, John and his firm, bilingual. The Daspit Law Firm is going to work for you 24-7, nights and weekends, no matter what type of accident you get in, car, boat, motorcycle. You might drive an 18-wheeler. You might work in a refinery. DaspitLaw.com. All right, time to switch gears here. Let's go to La Liga. Very, very interesting weekend here with the problems continuing at Barcelona. They lose in the Super Cup final to Athletic Bilbao. Lionel Messi, for the first time in 754 games, is sent off. We go to Barcelona, Spain, from TV3. He is Jordi Sunyer. He joins us now.
Jordi, thank you for coming on the program from Spain. We appreciate your insight always.
It's always a pleasure meeting you again, Glenn, and all your fantastic audience.
All right, so let's get started here. I know everybody's focused on Lionel Messi getting sent off for the first time in 754 games. Before we get to Lionel Messi, let's give credit where credit's due to Athletic and the way they won this game in a comeback and the fantastic finish from Iñaki Williams, which was a stunner there to beat Barcelona in the Super Cup final.
It's a remarkable achievement. Since they changed their coach, their manager, before the competition. As you know, Gaizka Garitano was sacked before the Super Cup, even after getting some points in La Liga. But in La Liga, they were not in a difficult situation, but the team was underperforming. They changed manager. And I was surprised that they appointed Marcelino García Toral as their new manager, because you don't see Marcelino as a manager for Athletic Bilbao. He's not a base manager. He's from Asturias. And I saw him as not the ideal manager for a club like Athletic Bilbao, with lots of tradition and that kind of symbols that are important in the day-to-day running of the club. But really, Marcelino has done a fantastic job. In a few days, he has revived the team. And, it's not mine. It's a tweet that I saw some days ago. There are only two teams in football history that have beaten Messi and Maradona in finals, which are the German national team and Athletic Bilbao, because Athletic Bilbao won the 1984 Copa del Rey final against Maradona's Barcelona in Madrid, 1-0. It was a very hard game, a very tough game, with a brawl at the end of the game. In this competition, in this Spanish Super Cup 2021, they beat Barcelona, but they also beat Real Madrid, playing a fantastic first half. So credit, kudos to them, because they did a fantastic job. They revived the best Iñaki Williams, because he was struggling in La Liga. He was not as scoring as he did in past seasons. And as you said, he scored a fantastic goal, a precious goal. It's true that goals scored before by Athletic Bilbao, by Oscar de Marcos in the 42nd minute and Asier Villalibre in the last minute of the game, in the dying minutes of the game before the extra time, were due to errors in Barcelona defense. That's an issue that Ronald Koeman has to work on, because Barca is showing a big weakness in defending set pieces, and that's one of the main things that Koeman surely will have to work in the next weeks.
Jordi Sunyer joining us from TV3 in Barcelona as we continue on. So before we get to Messi, I want to talk about the press, because I saw a press outlet over there, absolutely something that we never see here when it comes to the sport of soccer, and maybe in any sports, but a newspaper in Spain basically saying that the players should apologize to the fans for embarrassing them and shaming them and making them ashamed. This is a Barcelona newspaper speaking to the Barcelona players. This is on a different level than anything in the United States. Speak to me a little bit about that.
It has its roots in the fact that we don't have a sensationalist press here. We don't have tabloids like in, for example, the United Kingdom. There's no The Sun, there's no Daily Mirror, for example. We don't have a newspaper like that here in Spain. So the sports press is substituting what in other countries are the tabloids. The sports newspapers are tabloids in Spain. Be Sport, be El Mundo Deportivo, be Marca, be AS, the four of them. In 1979, Sport, the daily newspaper from Barcelona, was born, and it changed a little bit more the scenario, in the sense that they were the first newspaper to give the reader, considering the reader was a Barcelona fan, giving the reader what the reader wanted to read. So trying to understand which was the feeling of the supporter, of the Barcelona supporter, in every moment of the season, and giving opinions and informations, trying to match this feeling of the supporters. So these newspapers here in Spain, in Barcelona, of course, Sport and El Mundo Deportivo are, let's say, newspapers supporting Barcelona. Marca and AS in Madrid are newspapers supporting Real Madrid. Try to match these feelings, and it's not rare, it's not strange that you find things like the one you told me that may be surprising with for anyone coming from another press culture, so different. But we are here in Spain, we are used to that. Of course, I would like to read another sports journalism. Fortunately, there are smaller media here in Spain, football magazines, websites, and so on, that try to offer a good sports journalism, a quality sports journalism. But the mainstream media, the mainstream sports media, are try to be very close to the supporters. And that's why you may find these things that in other cultures, in other contexts, you may find disturbing.
Jordy Sunyer joining us here, TV3. By the way, the where I read that was in La Marca. So just to make sure that people know where I read that, they were saying the players should apologize to the fans. This is Barcelona for embarrassing them and making them ashamed. All right, let's go on to Lionel Messi. Two-game ban for Messi. There's a lot of people positioning this that Lionel Messi now is human because he finally got sent off for the first time in 754 games. Apparently, he apologizes to his teammates in the locker room. But take me into this a little bit deeper, the frustration that Messi is feeling now, and if you feel in the future he's gone.
Glenn, you said the word that explains everything. Frustration. That's the key word for explaining Lionel Messi's feelings and Lionel Messi's situation in Barcelona right now. He felt frustrated already in the summer when he threatened to leave the club and go to Manchester City. And he's now frustrated because in this Spanish Super Cup, you see, Barcelona has not been able to beat Real Sociedad and Athletic Bilbao, which are not top teams in La Liga, in normal time, because they needed penalty shootouts to beat Real Sociedad in the Spanish Super Cup semifinals. And for them, I was watching the game against Athletic Bilbao on television, but hearing the commentary on Catalan radio in Catalan language. And my fellow commentator was nearly celebrating the fact that Barcelona could try to equalize the game on extra time and force the penalty shootouts. That's Barcelona right now, trying to push the team to reach a penalty shootout in the Super Cup against Athletic Bilbao. That's the level right now. Compare that with the great Barcelona of Pep Guardiola, even the great Barcelona of Luis Enrique, the two best managers that Lionel Messi has played for. He stated that, Lionel Messi, in one of his recent interviews. So, some months ago, a member of Messi's entourage, one of the peer guys that Lionel Messi has, recognized to me that Messi wanted to play the World Cup 2022 in Qatar like his, as you know, his last dance, to take the title of the Michael Jordan documentary on Netflix. Qatar 2022 will be Lionel Messi's last dance. Before that, he wants to win a Champions League. He wants to win a Ballon d'Or. In the summer, he was already seeing that he couldn't win or there were not many possibilities of winning that with Barcelona, considering the state in which Barcelona is right now, not only in sporting matters, but in institutional matters, like the club is as the club is right now. But He gave a chance to Ronald Koeman because, you see, Ronald Koeman won the Champions League as a player for Barcelona in 1992, won the Champions League for PSV Eindhoven in 1988. He has this credit. He's a manager who has won things as a player opposed to Valverde or Quique Setién. So Messi gave a chance. And I think Messi had some moments or has had some moments this season thinking that something could be achieved, something could be possible. Maybe not the Champions League, but fighting for La Liga, winning a title, winning the Super Cup or winning the Copa del Rey, winning something. Not winning the Spanish Super Cup, not being able to beat Real Sociedad and Athletic Bilbao in normal time, you see, that's enormously frustrating for Lionel Messi, and he's human. Of course, he's human. He's the best player in the world, but he has his feelings as everyone. So, a part of that, I must say that this was a tough match. The match against Athletic Bilbao. There has been criticism on the referee's performance, Gil Manzano, on that match because his criteria in giving yellow cards to players in several situations of the game were not that clear. And I think also Messi thought about that and thought they are hitting us hard and they are not getting the punishments they deserve. So he expressed his frustration like that. I think it's a clear red card for Messi. No discussion. I think it's a clear red card. So, as I said, the word you said at the beginning, frustration, it's what sums everything about Lionel Messi and his situation in Barcelona right now.
Strained relations right now with Barcelona. We're talking to Jordi Sunyer of TV3. How much do you play into the theory that it's just mediocre around Lionel Messi? And maybe to that mediocrity, if you believe in that, with the supporting cast that he has, are the expectations of Barcelona fans a little bit askew? I mean, really, when it comes to looking at the actual overall quality of this team, and we all know how used to winning Barcelona fans are, but these are different times, and maybe it's very difficult for the fan through their lens to realize where they are right now.
Maybe it's a generational thing, and there's a generational gap in all that, because, for example, for people my age, I'm 42 right now, I live the Barcelona of the 80s, who didn't win nearly anything. Winning La Liga title in 10 years, for example, it was a big success, and there were big celebrations in the whole of Catalonia. But there's a generation born already in the late 80s and into the 90s, that only have seen Barcelona winning. First with Johan Cruyff, and that's true that there was that period with Joan Gaspar as president between 2000 and 2003, which was an absolute disaster. But then came Joan Laporta as a president, first with Frank Rijkaard, they won the Champions League, then with Pep Guardiola, then with Luis Enrique. So younger Barca fans are used to winning everything. And of course, that's frustrating. So there can be a generation gap with that. And the fact that there are many young Barcelona supporters that obviously expect Barcelona to win everything. But for people of my age, I think the most frustrating thing, of course, I'm speaking for myself. I cannot speak for all Barcelona fans. But watching the game the other day, I was thinking they're not playing that bad. The most obviously there are flaws. You cannot defend set pieces that awfully like Barcelona did the other day. You cannot have look out with this statistic. You cannot have 130 corner kicks to your favor this season and not being able to score a single goal from a corner kick. 130. Of course, it's unbelievable. Even if Barcelona traditionally is not a team that scores many goals through set pieces, that's true. But anyway, there are flaws and there are errors to solve, of course. But the frustration was watching them and thinking, They are not playing that bad. The thing is, they cannot do more. The team, the quality of the team has decreased so much in the last few seasons that you have the feeling that you cannot ask for more to this team. Even with world-class players like Lionel Messi, like Antoine Griezmann, like even Ousmane Dembélé, Barcelona are relying on players from the B team like Oscar Mingueza, like Ronald Araujo, which has been a surprise in this first part of the season, and I think he can be a good defender for Barcelona in the next few years. But like other big teams in Europe, for example, I think Juventus is one of the great examples about that. It's a team in rebuilding. It's a team in transition. So I think the most frustrating thing is that one. You cannot ask for more. You would like to... I would prefer to think they are playing bad. No, they are not playing bad. They are playing to the top of their possibilities, to the top of their capacity. And that's what, for many people, is also frustrating, I think.
That's part one of Jordi Sunyer from Barcelona, Spain. Always enjoy his contributions to the show. We'll have more with him when we come back. Quick word here for Advantage BMW Midtown. Now, I've driven a BMW for years. I've leased, I've bought from Advantage numerous times. I love the drive of a BMW. It's like no other. That's why they call it the ultimate driving machine. The other thing I love at Advantage BMW Midtown is the customer service. It is second to none. Advantage BMW in Midtown, they'll cover you with sales, service, finance. It can be done so easy. Get in a sedan, a 3.5, a 7 Series, or maybe in an X5. I throw my dog in there. I throw my bike in there. Took it all the way to New Jersey and back this past June. Get down to Advantage BMW Midtown. Ask for Justin ask for Steven. AdvantageBMWHouston.com. That is AdvantageBMW Midtown. We'll take a break. We got more to come.
ESPN 97.5.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters. Our final segment here is brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Let's get back to part two now with Jordi Sunyer of TV3 in Barcelona. Speaking of Jordi Sunyer, TV3 in Barcelona, Spain, we always appreciate his insight on this show. Let's switch it over to Real Madrid now. Sergio Ramos has signed one more contract. He's 34. Real Madrid want him to take a pay cut. Obviously, all of a sudden now, David Alaba is going to sign for Real Madrid. Very versatile, can play as a center back after 10 seasons at Bayern and coming through their youth system. Take us into this whole situation with Sergio Ramos and as such a great leader he has been for Real Madrid with so many honors and really symbolizing the club. At this point, should there be a little bit of a give back and he takes a pay cut maybe to remain there? I mean, where does this go?
You know, Sergio Ramos is one of the greatest captains that Real Madrid has had. He, as you said, he encapsulates all the values of Real Madrid. Very good defender, very good player. It's not only the symbol, it's the fact that he's one of the pillars of the Real Madrid team. It's a tricky situation, you know. Of course, everyone think that the ordinary fan think that he should take a pay cut in this situation in which we all are. COVID-19, money problems for all clubs, even for Real Madrid, even for Barcelona, of course. But you know, when you reach this age and these players that have given everything to their clubs, it happens also, for example, with Luis Suarez that finally signed with Atletico Madrid or even with Lionel Messi. I think Sergio Ramos can think about the possibility of moving to a totally different experience. For example, the MLS. Leaving the sport in the States, a very well organized competition like the MLS. Of course, the level is not the Spanish La Liga one, but it's quite a good level for a player that's near 35. He can play two, three good seasons still in the MLS. It's also true, but that their relationship with President Florentino Perez is not that good. They have some clashes last season, so it's a tricky situation for Sergio Ramos. I must admit I don't have all the information to all the details on how everything's going, but we'll have to wait and see. And it's a very good sign. It's a joker player for Real Madrid, the kind of player you need in Real Madrid's defense, knowing that Marcelo is reaching the end of his career. It's a very, very clever signing and a slap on the face for Barcelona. One more for a team that, as I said, is in dire straits.
Jordi Sunyer, TV3, before I let you go, with Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid, Barcelona, the top three, with Villarreal making it, rounding it out to four. Last thing I want to ask you about Real Madrid, and I only got about a minute here. How much pressure is Zinedine Zidane under as the manager now? Because, you know, you kind of see a few things coming out in his press conferences.
Yeah, the pressure's high. It's surprising that Zinedine Zidane there's a controversy about how he's dealing with Real Madrid this season, because the great signing of Real Madrid this last season's Eden Hazard, you know, he's struggling. He's clearly underperforming. They have lost Cristiano Ronaldo to Juventus. They rely on Karim Benzema, which is a fantastic player. I think it's a player I would always like to have in my team. It's a model striker. It's the model, the perfect role model for a striker, sorry, in the modern game, I think. So they're not a rebuilding team like Barcelona, but they are also building the team of the future. And David Alaba is one of their signings in that key, I think. So it's not a difficult an easy task. It's a difficult task for Zinedine Zidane this season. So it's surprising that he gets criticized for, of course, losing games, not playing very well. But you see, this season is different to the other ones in all competitions. So you have to adapt your style of play. How is Atletico Madrid winning games and keeping themselves at the first position in the table and so solid? Once I took the title of that Roberta Flack song, Killing Me Softly, Atletico Madrid kills their rival softly. They play killing their rival softly. These times are not times for playing beautiful football. So many games. The schedule is so packed with La Liga, Super Cup, Copa del Rey. Barcelona play tomorrow against a third-tier team, Cornellà, on a plastic surface, synthetic grass in Copa del Rey. Champions League from the second week in February. So you have to play. It's like a game of survival. And Atletico Madrid, I think they are the team that have known better. They have read the situation the better, and that's why they are first in the table. For Real Madrid, it has been a little bit more difficult, but the season is long. Of course, I don't see Barcelona fighting for the title, but I can still see Real Madrid fighting for the title. And knowing that Real Madrid, as their motto says, hasta el final vamos Real. That means until the end. They always fight until the end. That's part of the Real Madrid DNA, fighting until the last minute. And Sergio Ramos knows very well about that, as you know. So it surprised me. It surprises me that Zidane gets so criticized, because I think they can, even losing the Spanish Super Cup semifinal against Athletic Bilbao and not playing a good game, I think Real Madrid can still do something this season.
Jordi Sunyer from across the Atlantic in Spain, we thank you very much for coming on the show tonight. Always your insight, excellent. Thank you, Jordi, of TV3. That does it for Soccer Matters tonight on ESPN 97.5. Big thank you to all of our guests, Tab Ramos, James Clarkson, Dave Major, and also Jordi Sunyer over in Barcelona, Spain. Hit me up on Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock, Facebook Soccer Matters as well. Great job tonight, as always, done by producer Aaron Raybould. You can get the podcasts of this show, iTunes, Spotify, and podcastarena.com. It's your game. Spread the news about your game. Participate in this show. Listen, call in, do whatever it takes, but be a part of your game. On behalf of the firm, I'm Glenn Davis. Till next Tuesday night at 7 o'clock Central, this has been Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.